Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back again, ladies and gentlemen. For this evening, we should have Queen Ganashina Lone Wolf. Should be on the line with us momentarily, hopefully. If not, in the meantime, I am your host for this evening. I am Gehalla. It is Gehalla. That's G-E-H-O-L-L-A. Gehalla.com. Gehalla Radio. G-H-O-L-L-A. Radio.com. Also, FMG Media. .net, and this is FMG Media TV and Radio. Talk a little bit about the Queen Ganashina. I have been researching her all this day. She is born during a historic time in the civil rights era, struggle of indigenous people in America, or some people say Axum, or whatever you subscribe to. She's also the granddaughter of the most controversial man in the world, or men in the world, Mr. Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. So definitely need to check her out and see what's on her mind. And for right now, until we get her on the line, we're going to play a little bit from my artist boo. No, it's not. From my homie, Carrie Unsane. Oh, I almost forgot to pronounce her name. That's bad. Bad girl. Thank you for listening.
Dung beetle. I skate undo the clean to be icy. I'ma make a burn. always got a fight. Sad, the boy, I'm like, he know my standards, and I only write sex. Rated R, no use to flex. Clips in my phone, you should watch that shit. Flexible, gymnastic. Her body like, whoa, when the ass so thick. He said he got a girl, but I'm still first pick. Dude's a softy, I let him lay them bricks. You better let it go, cause I don't treat tricks. I'm a jerk, no bitch, I'm a prick. I'm really not a bad girl. I'm really not a bad girl. I'm really not a bad girl. I'm really not a bad girl.
Definitely knows my homegirl Carrie Ann Sang with a bad girl touring all across the world. She is definitely an international star. I'm going to play a little bit more from Carrie Ann Sang. This one is 1, 2, 3. Most definitely. That was Carrie Ann Sang, 1, 2, 3. She is definitely dope. Then we're going to play another one by Carrie Ann Sang. So this sounds like we're going to go in the mood. Yeah, we're going to try that.
lay your baby on your bone. Then I cast my spell, so we go to hell and back. But it's all up in my back. I put your heart under attack, 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 attack.
Saying in the mood, she's definitely dope. Love, 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 love. A little bit of Down Through There with Miss Hennessy Williams featuring Urban Mystic.
I wanna take you down to there. Take you down to there.
song before we get out of here. We have a no call, no show, and that's cool. Hope you enjoy your night. Queen Yanasana Lone Wolf, it was a pleasure, even if we didn't get a chance to speak with you. Our last song for this evening before we get out of here, Take You From Your Husband, Mr. Hennessy Williams. Good evening, Queen. You got a fellow Lone Wolf. How are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you? I just was texting Millie, and I said, I thought it was Wednesday. He said, nope, now. Get on the line. So I apologize for being late. He was like, you're late.
No, it's okay. I know you're busy.
Really, I'm not right now because I blocked out everything because Fear of the Walking Dead premiere was coming on. And I'm a huge Walking Dead fanatic. So I'm going to record it and then do this interview.
Well, you know what? We really appreciate you pausing your favorite show. I really do. That's an honor that you would take time out to talk to me when your favorite show is going. So I appreciate you.
Thank you. Very rare I watch stuff, but, you know.
No,
yes.
You know, it all has hidden symbolisms behind it, so it makes sense. You know, it tracks your subconscious level of thinking, so I can understand why.
Oh, my God, it does. You know, the reason people wonder, like, why are you so into Walking Dead or, you know, is it about zombies? And to be honest with you, it's not. It's about what happens when you are faced when the world is, like, coming to an end and there's a huge apocalypse, you know, who you will befriend and what you would do to survive. And we are, you know, we are really getting to a point right now with everything as segregated and separated, so many things that are happening. What it appears to be, we're more united. I mean, we're more we're more alike than what we think we are. And our injustice is more the same. But a lot of times we don't think that we are. We think we isolate our pain and things that we're going through. So we're more united than anything. So that's a major reason why I'm in love with The Walking Dead.
No,
because they all came together. If you look at it, you know, you have this white racist guy, you got this cop, you have this, you know, this professional black woman, you have, you know, all these different characters where if the zombie apocalypse didn't happen, they would not be friends. They wouldn't even call themselves family. But because it happened, they were forced to become a family and to survive together.
No, it makes sense. When I look at shows such as, like, The Walking Dead and any zombie movie, you know what I'm seeing? Or even the movie where I forgot the name of it, where they give them time to kill people for one night, The Purge. When I look at movies like that, it makes me think about the current state of melanated people around the globe. That's symbolically what we're going through. When you go through the hood, or you go through the reservations, it's all the same thing. We did not create those spaces. You are placed in those spaces. And when you go there, the energy is like watching The Walking Dead. Or when you grow up in the hood, you got that Walking Dead mentality. You're not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You feel like everything else outside of the context of where you're at is unreachable.
Mm-hmm.
And then the people that come into your space, they're treating you like those seven, you know, that are united, and they're looking at you in the same manner, like you're just, his jeans are sagging, oh, he must be dumb, you know, they're banging on the corner, they got reds and blues, you know, they're smoking cigarettes, they're smoking 40s, you know. It's like, reverse symbolism, you're giving it to us in an entertainment way where we can enjoy it, but subconsciously, you know, we're tied into that.
Yeah, we are. And as sad as it is, you know, one thing that my grandfather, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, said, he said that they always show us what's to come or what they're working on in the movies, you know. And so as sad to say, the purge, that 24 hours of killing one another will probably end up coming one day, you know, where you do have to. Where it's going to be a financial thing as well, you know. Crime has to be financed because they've already been financing crime anyway, you know, when we look at the guns that go into the hoods and the drugs and everything like that. They've been financing
crime for centuries, you know. So I think it will probably eventually get to that level. And when you look at the Baltimore uprising with Freddie Gray, you know, that was planned by the police. And that wasn't planned by the youth. When I went out there, I got the real story of what happened. And they purposely isolated those young people. They couldn't go home. They was trying to go home. And it was like, oh, we got a text message that said something about the purge. You all were going to purge tonight. You know, and Baltimore was already in a desolate place. And they needed to use something to be able to, you know, get insurance claims and to rebuild Baltimore. So that, you know, those young people wasn't even nowhere thinking on that level. They just wanted to get home. They didn't, you know, the protesting and all that was miles and miles away from that school that they were at. But that school is a very bad crime-ridden area. So that was financed. So, yeah, I mean, these movies and these shows all show us what they are planning or are doing now in our reality.
You know, you're right. I definitely agree with that. I know, especially when you start studying to, like, the occult. I know a lot of melanated people are afraid of that word. It sounds like witches mm-hmm. and broomsticks and stirring the stew. But when you see that, you're right.
Right.
You see how your subconscious is tied into, like, these symbols that they, you know, call the Illuminati. But those are our symbols. Those symbols go back to the very beginning of ancients or future
mm-hmm.
ancients, I like to call them, because we get all our knowledge from them. You know,
yeah.
So those things are attracting you and pulling you towards it, and you don't even realize it, you know, especially when you
mm-hmm.
start looking at these, especially the food. You know, the food is so horrible, your McDonald's, your Burger King's, all the things. We're eating it, and it's literally dumbing us down because we're not getting the proper light nutrients, you know, to be able to come out of that. So when they say stuff like True Blood and on the show
mm-hmm.
True Blood, which I like too, vampire series, it makes you think, wow, we are really eating something that is unnatural for our own self-survival.
Yeah.
And we're thinking
we
it's
are.
Giving us life.
Yeah.
And
we
study
are,
the cases.
And, mm-hmm.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Continue.
No, go ahead.
No. I want to hear you talk.
I was just going to add on to what you were saying. I just wanted to add on to what you were saying because, and I think you were probably going to go into it with Dr. Sebi and the other holistic doctors that were, you know, that recently, I believe, they were murdered, you know, because they're taking us back, you know, they're taking us to enlighten us and educating us, as well as coming up with other, going back to our traditional way of eating. And because they have been killing us, you know, I don't eat chicken. I don't eat chicken, and a lot of people are like, what? Why you don't eat chicken? Chicken good, you know. I don't eat chicken because what I end up learning was that African-American women, well, really women of color, deal with fibroids and tumors. We have the highest rate of fibroids, African-American women. And so my holistic doctor was telling me, she was like, it's because of chicken. And it's the hormones and what they're pumping. And she was just like, if you look into any Latino, Native American, or Black or community, whatever you see on every single corner is what you should not intake. So if you see Kentucky Fried Chicken everywhere, then you should not be eating that. If you see liquor, you know, whatever you see in the local bodega, you should not be drinking that. You know, so because they pump it in our community first. And if you look at, like, even Planned Parenthood, if you count how many Planned Parenthoods are in near the hood, then that just goes to show what their main aim is, you know. And then, and plus on top of it, the root of Planned Parenthood was to kill our babies anyway, you know. And so, it's really the foods, you know. That's why we have to get back into agriculture, urban farming, you know. And I was in Flint. I did an event called Hip Hop for Flint. And when I was in Flint, you know, that really disturbed me and hurt me in regards to the water. And And it also to the condition of the people that Flint, I learned so much when I was in Flint. I ended up learning that Flint was a very wealthy black city, one of the most wealthiest black cities. If you see Flint now, you wouldn't even recognize it as if you knew it what it was then. Very desolate, you know, very, very, very poor. And then and so seeing with the, you know, what they've been doing with the water, and then now, like what I'm fighting now is this Dakota Access Pipeline. They are the Army Corps of Engineers are trying to, they're working on building a pipeline throughout the Missouri River, which is going to affect basically everyone. This pipeline is an oil pipeline, so and it's going to, they're looking at building it alongside the river, which is going to, if that, you know, when it leaks, that's going to kill us all, really. You know, they're really trying to kill our water stream for oil. You know, America is really a junkie for oil. And so right now, the my tribe, the Ogallala Lakota, the Standing Rock Dakota, and the Nakota tribes have united with other tribes to fight this pipeline. They have just now got they now got three pipelines not to be built, but there's a total of 20 pipelines. And so right now they have been protesting. They have been setting up camp over by the Missouri River in North Dakota, fighting, you know, literally using their body as shields against these construction workers. And then they also have a legal team. They go into litigation on the 24th in Washington, D.C. So they're looking for people to go out there in solidarity with them. Everyone that's tuning in, you could listen, you could go to Rez. That's R-E-Z and then P-E-C-T, so it looks like respect, but it's R-E-Z, rwater.com to get involved. And if you can't physically go, then you could sign a petition, or you could also donate for the protectors. They say that we're not protesters, we're protectors of life. And so so you could go ahead and donate for the protectors that's up there. And, you know, so they're really, there's different levels that this government and these corporations are really trying to kill us through our water supply, through the land, and through, and which also is our food, you know.
No, you're right. That's absolutely right. And for all our listeners, subscribers, and viewers out there, please explain to people, because that's what I tell them this all the time. They look at me like I'm crazy. When they say native, especially in this country, they have to also know that there were a lot of black, dark-skinned, melanated, Moor, whatever you want to call them. They had color,
mm-hmm.
whatever. A lot of people really believe that all of the natives here were like the ones that you see on these shows like Gunsmoke and, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
These other shows where they're just lighter skin. Please explain to the people that that's not true.
Well,
that is a myth.
Well, really, to be honest with you, some of it is true and some of it is not, because it depends on the region of where the Native Americans were from. Now, one thing that is not true is that all Native Americans live in teepees, but that's not true. But in the southern region, a lot of the indigenous people that were in the southern region had a lot of their skin color was very brown skin or as dark and red like clay. Their some of their features were very Afro, you know, African, you know, features. Then you have the west, southwest, western region. They too had some of them, like if you look at the Navajo people, they look like they're Japanese or Chinese. They look Asian. And then you have, whereas my region, they look very kind of, some of them are brown skin, but they also look kind of European, but with very strong nose, you know. And so it just depends. And then you have the upper region. So it just depends. The same way how in Africa, you know, we, in Africa, our ancestors look very different, but, you know, with different types of features and things like that. That's the same with Native Americans. Now, with a lot of people, it's crazy that, you know, sometimes I get the most hated on by my Black brothers and sisters because they're like, well, who is she? So she acting like she Native, like she acting like she Indian, that she got Indian in her family. But she's as dark as me, you know. But I'm biracial. I mean, my mother was full blood Native American, and my dad was Black from Brooklyn. And so my father, I happen to get his skin color, and I love it. But I will never deny my mother. And I wouldn't want anyone to deny their mother because they don't look like their mother, or deny their father because they don't look like their father. So that, does that make me less Native American because I may not look like the Native American or the mixed person you want me to look like? Do you want me to be light skinned and, you know, do you want me to look like a mixed person in the way that you want your mixed people to look like? You know, and so that sometimes this is, I don't believe that we are in the time of the 1800s and the 1900s where we have to pass. So whatever we passing for, that's what we're going to go ahead and mark down what we are. We have to get past that slave master mentality of passing. So I'm not going to, you're not going to have me pass for being Black when I am Native American and Black. And I'm very proud of who I am. I was raised in my African and my Native American culture. My mother did, for her being a single mother and being Native American, I believe she did a phenomenal job, may God be pleased with her, but teaching me and my brother about our Black side. You know, she's the one that taught me about, you know, extensions and and how to take care of my hair, and, you know, so she also taught me how to press my hair, you know. Like, she taught me all of these, you know, I mean, these things. And she also too, she knew that if she was going to get with a Black man, she had to learn Black, she had to know, learn the culture and the history as well. But being in on the reservation and being in the hood, and I was able to see that we are more alike than we are separated. And I would say that what changed my life was a book called Black Indians by William Katz. Because, you know, that's what changed my life, was that book. Because I realized that I'm not the only one, that there's so many, you know, there are so many Black Indians before me. You know, and I ended up learning a lot about the history, even more so about the Creek, about the Choctaw, the Cherokee, you know, the five civilized tribes. And, you know, I just learned so much. And then I even started researching more about Mexico and about the and South America, and then the indigenous people that with African in them there. And, you know, I was just like, wow, I really felt that. Because I'm Lakota, so I'm a Plains, my tribe is Plains Native, so we're from South Dakota. So I was really, I don't think there was anyone in my age group that was Black and Native. And so I used to always be like, man, am I the only one? And then growing up in Arizona, I would be around Native children, there was none that was Black and Native. There was, like, maybe white and Native, but I didn't meet anyone. So I was, like, really like, man, am I the only one? But Black Indians changed my life. That book really, really changed my life.
Have you checked out the one that came before Columbus with Ivan Van Senema? That's a real good one, too. It talk about what they call the Omecs, but really they're just Africans that came over from the coast. And, you know, they built those large statues and respect to them, you know, because when you break down the word Omex, it's like how it's broken down. It turns into Mexican when you study, like, the etymology of it. And that's the origins of it all. He actually goes in and shows how, like you said, we was over here in this land too first. And what I found the most surprising thing, I had to do further research. I don't know if it's 100% true, but I have heard about it and I have saw some things where it talks about some Native tribes actually enslaved certain Africans too. Now, that's something I really found really to be interesting, that we were like, got this common bond. Continue.
Yeah, I would say that what I wouldn't say enslaved in the way of the way that white people enslaved us. It was more so, if I was just watching this documentary called Trail of Tears, and it's what's that guy? Morgan Freeman narrated it, but it's Native American. It's a Native American production, and they went into, it's a whole segment of Black Indians, and they went into the Cherokees. And see, if you learn about the five civilized tribes, they forced these tribes to basically be Europeanized. And so the more Europeanized they were, the more that they thought they were free. Because mind you, a lot of these natives were slaves before the Africans came. And but the problem was is that they were always running away. That was one big issue. But another thing too, they felt that they could not, they kept on dying off. This is their story. This is what they said. They said they kept on dying off. So it was, I mean, it was billions. I would say billions of Native Americans all throughout Turtle Island. But when the whites came and started enslaving them, they started enslaving them first. And then, so by the time the Africans came, were captured and brought over, at that point, then the natives, that's where they felt that before. One thing with all Native tribes, one thing that we believe is that we see the heart of people. We didn't know about color. Even with different tribes, we didn't see their color. Oh, they're darker than me, they're lighter than me. You know what I'm saying? We see the hearts of people. And so when they were seeing the treatment of the Africans, they saw their heart and like, man, I want to help them. So when some of the slaves were running away, they ran into the Native Americans and developed, and automatically they brought them in as part of the family, because that goes back to the indigenous way, indigenous meaning original people. So that goes back to the African and the Native way of, when you are a part of, you are part of our tribe now, you're a part of our family. We don't care, you know, where you came from, whatever. If your heart is pure, then we're going to take you in. So that's what happened. So, but when there was bounties on these slaves, then a lot of, because some of these freedmen were already making some money because they had land, they was doing, you know, whatever the land, you know, in regards to bringing in some type of income, then they went ahead and paid for these bounties and said, no, we're going to keep them here. You know, you can't, well, how much is it? How much is for this head? Okay, we'll buy it. We'll pay for it. So, you know, so of course, the language of white America wants it to be, oh, yeah, because that's not the first time, you know, I've heard this. I've heard this so many times, and this is an ongoing debate. Well, you know, Native Indians had slaves too, so we ain't as close as you think we are, you know what I'm saying? But we really, it was the only way to free the slaves was to be able to begin to purchase them. And not purchase them at an auction block, but purchase them when they ran away and became part of the tribe. All right, so that's the reason why you have the Dawes Rolls. That's Dawes Rolls. If you look at this list of names, these are all freedmen. Freedmen. So there is actually free slaves that were adopted and being a part of the family, a part of the tribes. So this is the reason why 89% of African Americans have Native in their lineage, is because of this. So and this is where the intermarrying and all that, there was no raping happening between Natives and Blacks. There were actually families that was happening. And one beautiful part, so 89% of African Americans have Native in their lineage. One beautiful part is that if you go, Native people, it's easy for us to trace back our history through our last name. My family, my last name is Lone Wolf. I could go to Pine Ridge, South Dakota, go to my family cemetery, and go all the way back to the first Lone Wolf. And I could, and then I would hear a story and know a story of why, how Lone Wolf came apart, came up to be, you know, came to be, as well as so many other names. So that's also the same way in the Cherokee, the Choctaw, the Chickasaw, in regards to the free, the in regards to the five civilized tribes. So if you see your family's last name, so if you're like, man, I remember my grandmother being, she said she was Indian, I think she was Cherokee. You know, so you could go to the Cherokee tribe, whether it's in Oklahoma or what, some of the bands throughout the southern region, find that last name, and the family could just go, you know, call the tribe and say, hey, do you know, so, you know, this last name? And they're like, oh, yeah, they live on, you know, that, because they happen to just kind of stick around or be around that family lineage. You know what I'm saying? So, so you'll be able to know, like, no. My great-great-great-great-grandfather wasn't a slave and wasn't bought on the auction block. No, he was. There was a bounty, and he was purchased by my. But because he was purchased by his wife, because they had children, or you know, or she was purchased by her husband because they had children, and they were, and they were that, you know, that African man or woman was a runaway slave, and so that's how that happened. And so today, the war between why white America does not like the union of Black and Native Americans today, especially with the Cherokee tribe, the war on it is because of our power when we're united. So just if you look at the beginning of our history, the Africans, our ancestors, ran away to Native Americans and became free. So, of course, that white slave master hated that. You know, he's like, no, man, these natives keep on buying our slaves. Like, no, that's my slave. They wanted control. So what they did, they did the Indian Removal Act. If you look that up, the Indian, you know, which also was a part of which was the Trail of Tears. And they did this throughout America, removing Native Americans away from the inner city. So then you have now today, the Black man and woman is close to the former slave master, but you have the Native Americans that's so far removed from the hood and from the inner city. So we don't even go with that. They put so much fear in Black people where we get scared if we venture off. But if we venture off into the mountains, into the woods, into, you know, into those areas, we would see Native tribes. We would see our you know, our relatives. And so, you know, I spoke about this before, but, you know, the power of the Black and the Native American is Black Wall Street. A lot of people don't know that was on sovereign land in Oklahoma. You know, if you look at the pictures, you will see mixed-looking type of people. And, you know, in those pictures that were part of the business owners of Black Wall Street, because those were freedmen as well as Native Americans. And it was like, okay, we're on this land that they told the Native Americans, like, okay, we're on this land that they gave us, but we're also going to build an empire on this. And also, if you look at the Seminole War, which was one of the tribes that actually fought, and they spent so much money fighting the Seminoles, you know, and that was the free slaves with the Seminoles, with the native people of that region, which was called the Seminoles, and that was the Seminole War. So our power united together is phenomenal, and I believe that's the reason why they want to continue to, you know, give us these little white lies or misconceptions and things like that to continue to separate us.
No, I absolutely agree. That's why I started off as, I always do it like when I'm unsure about something, I go, that's what's being said. But, you know, I never gravitate mm-hmm. to it and hold on to the title, because you're right. There's so many suggested lies. There's so many planet things. You're right, to keep all of us brown and Black away from each other, mm-hmm. hating each other. But like I say, you look at the cultures over here, and you look at the cultures in Africa, they're freaking similar. The dance is similar, yeah. The chants are similar, the rituals are similar, And you like, and like you said, I watched you on YouTube earlier when you talked about, you know, pretty much the woman being like God. Really, she is. She she's honored in Africa. She's honored in you like say native cultures. But like when it comes to black cultures, that's what we're suffering at. That's why we're lacking so hard too. It's because we put our women down so far. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like our mothers. Like the interesting thing I hear people say when they do like, I don't date dark skinned women. But I'm like, your mother is dark skinned or dark skinned is ugly.
Right.
And I'm like, your grandmother is dark skinned. What are you talking about? Are you plagued that much in your mind with the Eurocentric trick that you feel something that's a part of you is ugly? There's nothing that's ugly. It's ugly is an interpretation. It's a perception of what your opinion is. You know, we had this conversation the other day. We were talking about.
You had the conversation the other day. Go ahead.
This is your time. I want to hear you speak. I've been following, watching you all day. So come on, give me what you got.
Thank you. So you know, the attack on black people is an attack all around the world. And one thing that I learned, and even darker skinned people all around the world, this is how wicked this enemy is that came from Europe. You know, like a friend of mine, his name is Tori Russell. I'm sorry, the organization called Hands Up United. He's also on the board of Black Lives Matter. But he's a very good friend of mine, and he said that he went to Australia, and he was telling me that I got a passport. I don't have no stamps on it. I never traveled outside the United States. And so he was telling me, he's like, oh man, sis, you got to come to Australia. He said the things that you noticed and you went throughout North America in regards to indigenous people, he said they too deal with that, the aboriginals. And he said one thing that the Europeans did over there was their whole thing was, let's wipe out the blood, meaning that he said he met with this young woman. She was the first woman in five generations to not have got raped by a white man.
Wow.
He said that their whole thing was rape the aboriginal woman so she can be able to white out them. So instead.
Oh, okay. We seem like we lost Queen Yadasada Lone Wolf. She'll be calling back in just one moment. It sounds like her phone dropped. That's fine. Oh, here she is. She's back on the line. We had a little technical error. And when you hear the unmute, you'll be back on the line. Welcome back.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Sorry. So instead of them doing, basically they was like, okay, we see all of Australia, all Aboriginal people. So what we're going to do, we're going to rape these women so they could so they could have lighter skin children so we could eventually turn Australia into white Australia. See how sick and wicked? They was looking at generations to generations to generations to come that, okay, by the time the fifth generation comes, that you're going, so he said, so Tori told me that this young woman was as white as a white woman, but her features were broad nose, was African features. But he said that she had blonde hair, green eyes, but her features were her broad nose and the lips and her body shape looked like Africa. And I said, oh my God. So that just goes to show that not only here in America, but all over the world, even Mexicans, darker-skinned Mexicans deal with this. Darker-skinned Native Americans, some of my cousins that one of my cousins, she's probably a hint lighter than me, but she told me, she said, she said sometimes they call me the N-word. I said, are you freaking serious? She said, yeah, because of the wow. because of how dark I am. So, you know, this is all across the world in regard. There's such a – so when we talk about Black Lives Matter, Black lives really do have to matter because our black melanated skin is under attack all over the world, even amongst each other.
That's right. That's right. That's absolutely right. Even look at the Rio Games. I was looking at the intro to the Olympics,
mm-hmm.
and you know they had a
mm-hmm.
few. They had more than mm-hmm. few. I'm just saying the truth. They had a few speckles out there, and I'm looking like this is not the real Rio.
Right.
Know, they're holding the lighter skin, you know, Brazilians. I'm like, there's some very beautiful dark, like you say, African features. I think they say it's based upon, you know, your phenotype upon the continent
yeah.
where you live. If you live in thinner air, of course, you got to have broader nose, thicker lips. If you live in, you know, air with enough air, you'll have big nose, you know, whatever, so forth and so
mm-hmm.
on. So I was looking at that, and I was like, wow, they're really not going to show any dark-skinned Brazilians around the dome. And people have been showing pictures of how the dome is all lit up, it's illuminated, and you have, like, the
yeah.
projects. It's kind of like looking at the White House. The White House is the same
yeah.
way. Around the White House is, like, projects. Brothers and sisters
yeah.
around us is walking around in disparity. And you got $1 billion
yeah.
event going on right there. I'm like, you couldn't go get the people in the country and help them build and well, I know that's not part of the agenda, but build and teach
right.
them about lighting and structures and different things of that nature. You're going to build this right in front of them and drop it right there and then leave.
Yeah.
Like, wow.
And that's what my 15-year-old son called me up and was all like, Mom, you know, have you ever looked at the business of the Olympics? You know, one thing I do commend the Olympics on is their was the opening ceremony. I wept watching the opening ceremony in regards to how they highlighted the transatlantic slave trade and the way that they did that in such a phenomenal, emotional, impacting, you know, way in regards to they did not ignore that. I love to see that that Brazilian rapper, you know, as beautiful and dark as she is, but she was killing it, and she is one of the top rappers that's there. And she talks about, you know, being African and empowering, you know. So I would say that the only time I really saw that was that. But one thing I am seeing is that, you know, the power of the black woman in regards to the gold medals, you know, it goes back to what Beyonce said when she was like, the best revenge is your paper, but also the best revenge is your talent. And those sisters are showing us, you know, that, Jesse Williams said, that our magic is real. You know, and they are really they're coming home with all those gold medals. It's beautiful to see that it's not just in America, but Jamaica and even in London, and you know, it's like they're really all around the world. It's nothing but beautiful black women in the games. So it was kind of like a, you know, so I believe that for the people around the community that are looking at that, it can be empowering. I do hope that because it is highlighted, you know, that they are able to begin to start cleaning up and giving those people jobs. Because from what I learned, and I have a friend that's a publicist for some of these athletes, and she was reaching out to me the entire time she was in Rio, and she was telling me, she was just like, man, I wish you was out here so you could see, you know, what they're doing to the people here. You know, she's like, they're basically homeless while the athletes are living in their homes. You know, I was just like, oh, my God, you know. So she was telling me how the treatment of their own residents or what they was doing, you know, wasn't good. But that's been an ongoing problem for years, you know, in Brazil, you know.
Man, you're right. That's something else. And speaking of talent, I'm not going to hold you too much longer.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to talk a little bit about your music career and that nature. Who influenced you in rapping? Like, what made you really start to really do music? What was your greatest influence in that?
I would say that one of my biggest influences was Queen Latifah. She, as well as Public Enemy and Big Daddy Kane. They were the three that, like, I just was like, oh, my God. You know, Public Enemy in regards to their lyrics. Because Public Enemy, I was like, man, you know, I grew up around revolutionaries, around conscious people. And, you know, and I would hear, you know, my grandfather, I hear the minister, you know, speaking. And, you know, so it was like, God, I wish there was some type of music that could go along with what they're, you know, because I was so young, I was just like, you know, hearing all of this a lot, and it was great. But at the age of 6, 7 years old, it was like, you know, there was no group, you know, that was kind, you know, basically putting his words were into music form until Public Enemy came out. So when I heard Public Enemy and then they sampled the minister, I was like, yo, I love them, you know. Big Daddy Kane, because he was just so, I loved his cadence. I loved his flow. His flow was just so ill to me. Queen Latifah, because of the fact that she just did it with so much dignity. And she was dope on the lyrics. But she, you know, she really, we didn't know, we wasn't all able to touch Nefertiti. We wasn't able to touch Isis. We wasn't able to touch, you know, Cleopatra, you know. But Queen Latifah was the closest to that. She really, in hip-hop, you know what I'm saying, like in our culture, in our generation, she was able to really display this is what a queen looks like, you know. And I admired her. I wanted her crown so bad. I was like, God, I want that crown, you know. You know, and so, like I used to always be like, I want the crown for Miss America. But once Queen Latifah came out, I was like, yo, I want that crown, you know what I'm saying? Like that, she just looked so freaking fly. And then her dances was so dope with their, you know, with their suits on and the Africans, you know, trimming and all that. And so those were my major key influences. Of course, a lot more after that, but you know, because I'm just hip hop. You know, one thing my grandfather said, the minister said, he said that one hip hop song is equivalent to 100 of his speeches, either 100 or 1,000 of his speeches. So that's the power of hip hop, and so that's how I fell in love with hip hop. I fell in love with hip hop because it was, for me, it was freedom. You know, I was already, my mother was already on the run from the feds. We was always protesting. We was always camping out at, you know, camps and fighting and all of that. And I was always around cultural music. But then once I heard hip hop, once I heard rap music, and once I saw break dancers, that changed my life. I was just like, yo, like, this is so free, you know? Like, yeah, so... Yeah,
you kind of got a story, kind of like Pac, kind of like Tupac a little bit, you know, being on that revolutionary side, you know, parents wanted by this government. That's really intriguing.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
It's crazy you say
it.
Thank you. It's crazy you say it, because like Raekwon from Wu-Tang Clan, who was a good friend of mine, he told me, he was like, man, you like a female Pac, like, and I get that quite a bit, and I wish I met Tupac, but I am able to really relate to Tupac. The way that he grew up, his, you know, I mean, that was how it was for me too, you know, but his was more on a black, I mean, I was around Black Panthers as well, but mine was more of the American Indian movement as well as the Nation of Islam. And but the Nation of Islam in the early days with like when Farrakhan was, you know, he was out there protesting. You know what I'm saying? Like, we was, like when we did the siege at Big Mountain, I was like, I believe I was about 6 years old, and I was in fatigues every day. You know what I'm saying? My mother had me and my brother in fatigues every day. Like, yo, if it gets down, you're going to go in those bushes right over there. Like, my mother taught me how to look for, you know, for, look out, you know, don't talk to that unmarked cargo over there on your way to school, you know, because that was the feds. You know, my mother taught me how to, like, she just was teaching me a lot of security things growing up. And so when, you know, when she did, you know, go to prison, that was my wake-up call. And that was, you know, I just looked at the government and everything totally different after that, especially that, you know, they illegally imprisoned her. So I was just like, man. So Tupac, I can really, really identify with Pac. And I really, I just like, man, I wish I got a chance to meet him, you know, and cause I think we would have had a lot in common.
Yeah, that would have been a real dope collabo. I'm not even going to lie. I heard you spitting on video. That would have been a real, real, real dope collaboration. Now, I also saw that it was a little bit older video, but you were talking about you were on tour with Wu-Tang, and how has that worked out? Did you get a chance to do any songs with any of them, any of those guys?
Oh, yeah. I have songs with Capadonna as well as I was on tour with Wu-Tang Clan, and then I ended up going on tour with Raekwon. I co-headlined with him, and as well as Redman and Method Man, and Ghostface. And then I ended up headlining and started doing my own tours. I haven't picked up the mic in probably like, goodness, my son is now 5. I just got into mommy mode, so it's been about 4 years since I picked up the mic. But my music is never old if you haven't heard it. it's still in stores. It's on iTunes. It's in Walmart. It's in FYE. You know, so it's in digital as well as retail stores all across the nation. I'm also on Kanye West's Good Morning, Good Night album with Malik Youssef. I'm on that album. And so if you just put in Yanashaha, which is spelled YONASDA, on any of the, you know, any of the store fronts, then my albums will come up. I have two of them, God Love and Music and All Hail the Queen.
All Hail the Queen, no doubt. That's cool right there. You are a big deal, right? We need you. You know, I often tell people you need the duality. You need the Nicki Minaj's. And you also need the queen. You know what I'm saying? We need you too.
Right.
It's a duality.
Right.
You know, I think that's just like with Pac. I think that's what a lot of people didn't get about him. And they probably don't get about you and me, whoever else. That's cool. You could be all intellectual and conscious and let me break down the stars and the metaphorical. You know, let me give you all that. Then, too, you got that other side of you. That's just if you grew up in the hood, you grew up in the streets, you grew up in college, whatever, you just got that also.
Yeah.
I think that's perfect. I think that's just humans as what we
you
are.
You have to
You're
be
not
able to, thank you so much. You have to be able to relate to the people. And, you know, and I thank God for my struggles. I thank God for my pains and the journey that I have that he has put me on thus far. You know, I don't dwell into the coulda, shoulda, woulda, you know, of life, because I look at it as all as a blessing because my testimony, I believe that we all should be able to share our testimonies in life, and because we never know how that's going to help one another. And that's why I did pick up the mic doing music, because I was sharing my testimony in a musical form. Now I am at a point where I'm sharing my testimony through I have a book that I'm working on right now. Well, it's already done, but I want to put out. I have a TV show that I'm working on right now, like a docuseries that I'm working on right now, and as well as my memoir. So I think that it's important to be able to share your testimony, because you never know what people are going through, but you also never know how your story could empower and help others. And if you are, you know, like especially with social media, now with social media, everyone's a leader. Everyone is a self-proclaimed leader, you know what I'm saying? And then everyone has a responsibility every time they tweet, every single time they post a picture. Even if you only have, 100 followers, you have a responsibility to those 100 people that's following you. You know, when you really think about following, they're following you. You have a following. So that means that you are a leader. Yep. So it's important to be able to know that that person is looking at you to, you know, for encouragement, because you never know what someone's dealing with, you know, at all. I just finished watching Chuck Creekmore from allhiphop.com. He told me yesterday, we was on the phone until like 3 in the, like probably like 2 in the morning, but he was watching this movie called I Am Not Your Guru by Tony Robbins. And so I just finished watching it, and I suggest everyone that's listening to watch it on Netflix. It's called I Am Not Your Guru. But you just never know what people are going through. And one of the women, she was saying that she was You know, she was in a sex trafficking. And if you look at her, I mean, I didn't even see that coming out. I was like, wait, what? She what? You know, she was from Brazil, and she was, you know, she was a part of, it's called the Children of God, which was a sex trafficking cult thing. And I was like, what the heck, you know? So you just never know what someone's going through, and you could always, you know, share your testimony to, you know, to help others. Because you never know. And then we're in a time, like how we started off this call, you know, we're in a time right now that our unity is really going to be our salvation.
No, you're absolutely right. A couple final questions before I let you go. Tell us what it's like being the granddaughter of, some people say controversial, I just say he is who he is, of the Honorable Louis Farrakhan. What jewels did he teach you, or what jewels did you take from him on a one-on-one level? About the world and knowledge and who you are. Like, can you share some of those experiences with us, with him?
Yeah, I would say, oh man, you know what? He has shown me what a real man is supposed to be, and a spiritual, like what a real man of God is supposed to be. He truly loves us, and he, too, is a person that looks at people's heart. He looks at the heart. His spirit of discernment is phenomenal. I was very honored and blessed to be on tour with him last year for Justice or Else. And the way that I saw and observed him, you know, embrace and love, you know, just embrace Young Thug to all the way to Eminem, to all the way to one of the Kennedys, you know, it was the same across the board. It was just he looks at people's heart, and he absolutely loves us. It's not a talking thing. Some people do this for financial gain, you know, leadership and things like that. Some people do this for fame. He does not do it for any of that. He does it because he really wants to see us all free from injustice, free from hate, free from pain. You know, he wants to see us, and he has fought, and I mean, he is 82 or 83, and so within this time, he's 83 years old, and he moves like he's 40. And I am just, you know, and we all should be very blessed that we have, you know, we still have him in our midst today, and that he is a fearless leader. He cannot be bought. He has never been bought. When we was on tour, you know, there were certain, you know, certain people that was like, why don't you go on CNN and go on MSNBC and Fox News to promote the 20th anniversary of the Million Man March? If you notice, he wasn't on no major media outlet, even though everyone wanted him on that. You know, a lot of people reached out and wanted him on that. He was like, no, I want to be amongst our people. So we was in the hoods. He walked the streets of Ferguson. He walked the streets of when we was in Cleveland. He walked the streets of Chicago. You know, we was in the hood in Miami. You know, so he loves our people so much, and he knows, and he also loves young people. He loves our generation, and he knows that the power is with us. And so I could go on and on and on about him, but I absolutely love him. I know for a fact that everything that he has said has manifested into truth. And he's a truth teller. And I believe that if we really look at him, that I believe that he is the perfect example of what a man of God is supposed to look like and be like. And he's always on time. There's, you know, he always said, you know, you don't take people for granted. He's never been 1 minute late. He's always on time. And he, you know, for a meeting, for whatever he say he's going to do, he does it. He's never fell to the wayside in that. In all of my little small 30-something years that I've been alive, I've noticed that, you know. And so I absolutely love, and I would die for the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan.
No, I'm with you. And that's very well needed. I'm glad to say that because, you know, a lot of people from the outside looking in, of course, people are entitled to their own opinions and all that stuff, but it's good that someone that's right next to him that bleeds the same blood he bleeds, so to speak, or running through your veins can attest to him and who he is. I would love to get him on the podcast just to talk to him, even if it's like 10 minutes. That would be like awesome. we need that. We need that knowledge and that wisdom from, you know, that time where, you know, you got your Malcolms and all that coming up. They really had it hard. You know, we got it bad, but they really had it hard. You know, they would walk.
But, you know, he studied right under Malcolm, and he was there during Malcolm, you know, I mean. And so it was like even his testimony, you'll just be like, I mean, he said he put cardboard on the bottom of his shoes because the soles of his feet had holes in it and he could not afford to buy new shoes. But he knew that going amongst the people and ministering to them and selling spinal cords and, you know, ministering and all of that stuff was more important than some shoes. You know, his clothes was hand-me-downs that he found in the garbage. The food, he told me one time, him and my grandmother, they got food from the restaurant, from the trash, to feed the family. I mean, his testimony is phenomenal. So everything, when you hear his testimony, then you'll be like, man, he deserves everything. he even deserves the hate. He deserves that hate because, you know, if you're loved by everyone, then there's a problem. So you kind of do want to have some haters, you know what I'm saying? Because, you know, not everybody loves God. You know, not everyone loves God. So it's like, you know, that's just the way of the world. So in regards to anti-Semitic and all, Jesus didn't like the Jews that was a part of the synagogue of Satan. He said it in the Bible. He said, do not follow the synagogue of Satan. So, you know, so those that are a part of the synagogue of Satan, yeah, of course, they're like the Jew, you know, they're the Judas that put Jesus on the cross. That was like, oh, no, you know, Jesus was calling us out. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's saying we're the synagogue of Satan. And we are, but we don't want Jesus to tell us, tell the people the truth. So we're going to go ahead and put him on a cross. So that's the same thing that they've been doing to the minister. He's been calling out
the ones
that follow the synagogue of Satan.
You're right. We're the real Jews anyway. So they from the Ashkenazi Mountains. So they're from Caucasian light-skinned Jews. So I got you. You can't hate yourself.
But yeah, basically.
You. Mm-hmm. Y'all fake.
Mm-hmm.
You know it.
Mm-hmm.
You converted over. That's how you got here. That's why you are accepting all of those indigenous people from Ethiopia. That's why they're able to come into Israel. That's why they're able to come there.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep it real.
Yep. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No doubt. It has been definitely a pleasure. I know I want you to get to your show. I have one final question/statement.
Yes.
Or I'm going to say, I'm going to leave this up to you. You could take as long as you like or as quick
mm-hmm.
as possible. Totally left up to you. I would like for you
mm-hmm.
to leave a message to all of the people that's going to hear this podcast, because I am going to edit it and mix it down and throw it on YouTube. I'm going to send your people a copy of it or example of it.
Thank you.
So you can look at it and check it out and hear it. No, thank you. I appreciate
you.
And I'm going to follow you on all social media. So my name is G Holla.
Thank
it looks a little weird. Some people be like Gula, Guala, Giola, and I'm like, no, it's G Holla. It's just G dot H O L L A.
I was like, Giola? Okay. It's okay.
It's cool. No. It's cool. You know, cause I like it because people, it catches their mind. They go, oh, yeah, I got it. So I got it now. So next time when they hear it, they go, I know that guy. Yeah, I talked to him. Yeah, he's pretty cool. But I'm embellishing at that part. But please leave whatever message that you would like for the youth, for your peers, for our elders, or even those who have transitioned. It doesn't matter. This is your time to speak. Like I said, take as long as you like or as short as you like. It doesn't matter to me. So whenever you're ready, please leave us your divine message.
In our native way, in our native language, all tribes, we all say Matakiasi or Matakiape or Matakuasi. You know, we say it, but it all means the same thing, which means that all my relations, or we are all related. If we get to back to the core, the foundation of that value system of that we're all connected, that we're all related, then I believe that that's going to be able to help us today as well as tomorrow to really begin to start, instead of looking at our what makes us different, let's start looking at what makes us similar. And once we are able to get to that, then I believe that all the issues that we all are dealing with as people, then we'll be able to unite together. So, Matakiasi, we're all related. And so I pray that every single one of your listeners that are tuning in right now are be able to have a prosperous new year, going into the new year of 2017. We are going to go through a trial, but I look at all these trials that we're going through is all forcing us to unite. It's, you know, I always say that anytime you are being, you're feeling uncomfortable is when a blessing is going to happen. I believe that we as people of color have became too comfortable in what we thought was the American dream. Right now, we are being forced to do what our ancestors fought so hard to do in regards to self-governing, economics, agriculture, all these things that Nat Turner, Sojourner Truth, Cesar Chavez, Sitting Bull, Crazy Horse, Marcus Garvey, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Malcolm X, and I could go on and on and on. They all, even Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., they all wanted us to be kings and queens, not in the material way, but also, but more so in regards to having true knowledge of self and acting upon it. So I strongly believe that until we get to that point and really rise up as true kings and queens and get back to the foundation of having empires like we had in Africa, like we had in South America and Mexico and even in North America, then we are going to continue dealing with these all of these injustice that's happening all around the world, from police brutality to even the murder that we do on each other, all these things. Nothing happens without God's permission. So we really have to, we're getting uncomfortable right now, and it's a good thing. It's a blessing. I look at that as a huge, huge blessing. So let's get uncomfortable as we go into the new year and begin uniting with the people in your neighborhood, your neighbors, talk to your neighbors again, and let's begin start growing together as one human, righteous family. Matakiasi, Wopila, Palamia, thank you. Thank you so much for having me on your radio show.
Thank you. It is a pleasure to speak with the queen. Long Wolf. I don't know why. Every time I say your name, I just want to howl. I just want to be like, ooh, I don't know why.
So the guys go, oh, okay, like, or a hoe. Yeah, so you can say a hoe. Or you could go, not a hoe.
I know.
Or you could go a hoe, like a hoe. But the girl, the okay. Woman, we go lee 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 lee. We're like we go lee. but the men go a hoe, like a hoe. You know, like it's really it looks like a it looks like a h a u. That's the oh. And then the woman we go lee, 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 which is L-I-L-I-L-I-L-I. Yeah.
Oh, that's so. Pretty cool. Oh, I'm gonna start doing it on my show. I'm gonna give you a shout out every time. I'm like, for the queen. Oh.
Yeah. Or a hoe.
You gotta be careful. Some of the new age women, the millennials, they may not get that. Who are you talking to? No. That ain't
like, who are you talking to? Like, no, I don't know what you talking about. I got Indian in my family. I'm saying a hoe.
No doubt. We
thank you.
Time and her stuff. No, thank you. I really appreciate it. It has been an honor and pleasure. And we will check back in with you in a few months. For now, see what you got going on. We'll be glad to support it. I am
thank
enjoying
you.
It right now. which is in Augusta, which is close to Atlanta. It's about 2 hours away. It's where they played a Masters tournament where Tiger Woods won that one year, and they were like, we don't serve collard greens here. This is the city that I'm located in at home. Yeah, it's crazy. The big golf tournament, that's where we're at. But long story short,
we're
all from Atlanta. Got anything going on, let us know. We'll come out and support you and support what you got going on. Again, my name is Jihala. You find this radio interview on jihala.com, Jihala Radio, also FMG Media TV, fmgmedia.net. FMG stands for Family Mobile Group, which means we are all the head of our own destiny. And it was a pleasure having the queen on the show with us. And we hope you have a beautiful evening, beautiful night. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Good night.
Cool.
We have wrapped up another beautiful show with the queen. No doubt. This is G. Holland. Everyone have a good night. Thank you.